Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm. As expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, I'm pleased to say there's been a lot of positive response to my review of the bidding at Sandy Hook, where you can find a lot on my Twitter, at Jim Fetzer. It's rather fascinating. Elon Musk has now bounced a couple of journalists and Keith Olbermann, whom I at one time thought was a genius. He had a show on MSNBC that in its time, and this would be going back a good number of years, I thought was the single best program on television, bar none, which I now regard to be the case for Tucker. I'll return to Tucker shortly because he seems to be coming round on a rather key issue where I felt he's been wet behind the ears forever, surprising to me. But Musk has bounced people who are giving real-time information about the location of people who could be targeted, including the location of his own private jet. So he bounced them. He said after the fact, when they're no longer that location is okay, but not when they're actually there and in real time. And I think he's being utterly reasonable and responsible. Meanwhile, whether the United States and the West are being reasonable and responsible with regard to Ukraine and Russia is an entirely different matter. I see no signs of rationality on the part of the West. I need no indications of being responsible with regard to respecting Russia's bona fide legitimate national security concerns. Here we have a report. The relationship between Russia, this is from Hal Turner, by the way, the relationship between Russia and the West has reached a confrontational stage, and the sides will have to live in this environment further on. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov told Pavel Zarubin's Moscow Kremlin Putin program on Rossiya 1 TV channel. That's, of course, a Russian television network. Well, we're not moving. We've already arrived at a station named Confrontation, and we will have to be reserved strong to have underlying strength because we will have to live in the environment of this confrontation, he said when asked where the relationship between Russia and the West was moving. He said, U.S. hostile actions and arrogant disregard for Russia's legitimate demands for security guarantees, including non-deployment of strike weapons near the Russian border, non-expansion of NATO, return of its military potential to 1997 level, have brought relations between the USA and Russia to a point of no return. Meanwhile, another report, West facing existential choice. Western countries are standing at a crossroads and must decide whether they want to continue pursuing selfish policies that address only their own security or recognize that this is a dead-end track. The vice speaker of the upper chamber of the Russian parliament, Konstantin Kosachev, said on Tuesday, writing on Telegram, Kosachev, who also chairs the Foreign Affairs Committee of the Federation Council, said, sooner or later, the West will have to make an existential choice between catering for only its own interests or admitting that this suicidal strategy has exhausted itself. The senator noted that a return to the principle of indivisibility of security architecture was the only path forward. He explained that this means a deliberate refusal to ensure one's own security at the expense of other countries, adding that it serves as a cornerstone for all complex diplomatic arrangements. The vice speaker also claimed there's a rift between Western countries on this issue, pointing to statements made by French President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Olaf Scholz on the need for a new security framework after the Ukraine conflict ends. According to Kosachev, these remarks suggest that there are still remnants of common sense and a sense of self-preservation in France and Germany, which are behaving more responsibly. That sentiment, however, is not shared by a number of other EU countries, including the Baltic nations and Poland. According to Kosachev, these remarks, earlier this month, Macron had expressed the view that NATO should prepare security guarantees for Russia after the Ukraine conflict is settled. Around the same time, Scholz noted that peace in Europe depends on the revival of post-Cold War security arrangements with Russia. Reuters reported Monday, citing sources, the three Baltic states, along with Poland and Slovakia, had officially lodged their disapproval of the French leader's remarks on making guarantees to Moscow. The same day, the Polish Deputy Foreign Minister Paweł Jablonski said that Russia should not expect such promises from other nations, arguing Moscow has to ensure the safety of the EU, not the other way around. Meanwhile, Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg of NATO says he fears a full-blown war between Russia and NATO is a real possibility. I fear that the war in Ukraine will get out of control and spread into a major war between NATO and Russia, he said, according to the Telegraph. If things go wrong, they can go horribly wrong. Meanwhile, Putin has made a real nuclear threat, while the U.S. merely yawns in response. Russian President Vladimir Putin stated today, that was Friday, Russia is considering changing its nuclear doctrine to allow for preventive, not just retaliatory use of nuclear weapons. Such a change would align Russia's nuclear posture with Washington's own strategic doctrine and at one stroke make the world far more dangerous. This, by the way, is coming from Ray McGovern, who's a very formidable guy who knows what he's talking about, very experienced in all of these matters. For readers who may have missed the memo, U.S. missile capsules already emplaced in Romania and Poland, ostensibly for anti-ballistic missile purposes, can accommodate overnight what Russia calls offensive strike missiles with even shorter launch to target time than those Kennedy strong-arm Khrushchev to remove from Cuba under threat of nuclear war. Mind you, there was a behind-the-scenes agreement that if the Soviet Union would remove their missiles from Cuba, the United States would remove its missiles from Turkey. JFK made those negotiations. They were not made public, but they were very real. He was acting in a rational, responsible fashion. He was acknowledging the Soviet Union's legitimate national security concerns, just as NATO is ignoring Russia's legitimate national security concerns today, making the situation overwhelmingly more hazardous. Ray McGovern. Another largely unreported factoid, when President Biden and Putin held a conversation on December 30th of 2021, the Kremlin readout stated, Joseph Biden emphasized that Washington had no intention of deploying offensive strike missiles in Ukraine. At once, senior Putin advisor Yuri Yushchenkov pointed out approvingly this had been one of Moscow's chief goals in proposing security guarantees for the U.S. and NATO to consider. 6 weeks later, after a follow-up Putin-Biden call on February 12, 2022, he lamented that Biden had not addressed non-deployment of strike weapon systems on Ukrainian territory. We received no meaningful response. Putin's remarks also served to put some context around the recent rash of contrived accusations that Putin has threatened to use tactical nuclear weapons. That charge is a red herring and a highly mischievous one at that. The Kremlin strongly suspects some sort of false flag nuclear explosion, perhaps a dirty bomb, may be used by the West to justify responding with some kind of tactical nuclear weapon lying in bunkers in several NATO member states. The Russian fear NATO might opt for this kind of nuclear solution as the only possible way to stave off definitive defeat of Kiev's remaining forces this winter. Yes, Russia is fully capable of inflicting such defeat on Kiev, absent any prospect of serious negotiation. This is very important stuff. Putin has not explicitly threatened to use tactical nuclear weapons. Rather, from the outset, he said he is committed to using all the means at his disposal. In his December 9th remarks, excerpted below, he explains what those words mean. From Russia's point of view, he speaks of launch on warning of strategic weapons. That is the deterrent. In other words, we're not talking about tactical battlefield nukes. We're talking about strategic weapons that are intercontinental ballistic that would be aimed at the UK, the US, other NATO nations. Deterrence has worked in the past, but only when the U.S. and Russia both had a healthy respect for the balance of terror. It was what Putin calls a potent deterrent, a deterrent the Russian fear may have lost its edge. And of course, he's alluding to the doctrine of mutually assured destruction, MAD, where both sides knew the other had the capacity to retaliate massively if one were to strike, and that it would be a lose-lose situation for both. What the Kremlin is concerned about is that the U.S. may have in mind the prospect of launching a preemptive attack that would disable the Russians from a sufficiently severe counterattack. So we're returning to the kind of calculated risk that JFK found so appalling, the very idea of conducting a first strike because they'd lose, 150 million and we'd only lose 100 million. It's that kind of reasoning, that kind of insanity that has prevailed in the past. Here are excerpts from the Kremlin website. Question to Putin. You said, and I quote, if Russia does not use nuclear weapons first, it won't use them second either. This caused an uproar. Please explain what you meant. Putin. the United States has this theory of a preventive strike. They're developing a system for a disarming strike. Regarding a disarming strike, perhaps we should think about using their idea about how to ensure their own security. We are just thinking about this. The United States has a theory and even practice. They have the concept of a preventive strike and their strategy, we do not. Our strategy talks about a retaliatory strike. What is a retaliatory strike? That is a response strike. That is when our early warning system, the missile attack warning system, detects missiles launched toward Russian Federation territory. First, it detects the launches, and then response actions begin. After the early warning system receives a signal indicating a missile attack, hundreds of our missiles are launched, and they cannot be stopped. But it is still a retaliatory strike. What does that mean? It means that enemy missile warheads will fall on the territory of the Russian Federation. This cannot be avoided. They will fall anyway. True, nothing will remain of the enemy because it's impossible to intercept hundreds of missiles, and this is, without a doubt, a potent deterrent. But if a potential adversary believes it's possible to use the preventive strike theory, while we do not, this still makes us think about the threat that such ideas in the sphere of other countries' defense pose to us. That is all I have to say about that. Western pundits, McGovern adds, have been largely silent on this. Those who have mentioned it speak of saber rattling by Putin bluffing. I would not be so cavalier. Ray McGovern works with Tell the Word, the publishing arm of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington in the 60s. He served as an infantry intelligence officer, then became a CIA analyst for the next 27 years. He's on the steering group of veteran intelligence professionals for sanity. And he's a very smart guy. He cares. Meanwhile, a shocking discrepancy has been found in the Maricopa vote count, allowing Hobbs to steal the election. As Carrie Lake proceeds with her lawsuit over the voting, in Arizona's election, statements and numbers are being revealed. Her lawsuit, filed last Friday, alleges there was around a $25,000 vote discrepancy in the total number of ballots Maricopa County initially reported had been cast in the November 8 midterm election versus the total it reported later that week, which had jumped by around 25,000 votes. Highlighting the chain of custody failure, the fact that 2 days after Election Day was completed, Maricopa County found more than 25,000 additional ballots. Whereas properly followed chain of custody procedure would require Maricopa County election officials to know the exact number of ballots submitted by the day after the election, November 9th. Specifically, Maricopa County's public statements concerning remaining ballots to be counted on November 9th and November 10th show an increase of approximately 25,000 votes with no explanation of why the number of remaining ballots should increase. This, of course, is exactly what they were doing to steal. They would add ballots. That's why dragging out the counting gives the Democrats the opportunity to steal elections. They have to figure out how many ballots have actually been cast, how many they need to subtract from the winner to make theirs replace her, or how many they need to add to the loser to make her the winners. The brief state said on November 9th, the Maricopa County Recorder announced the county's vote center closed for the day, where 275,000 mail-in ballots, referred to as EV ballots, that had been sorted for scanning and signature verification. However, the next day, Maricopa County election official Celia Nabor contacted the county's contractor, Runbeck Election Services, and said it scanned 298,000 ballots. So look at that, 275 versus 298. That's 23,000 unexpected increase. On November 9th, Maricopa County reported to the AZ Department of State it counted 1,136,849 ballots and had 407,664 left to be tabulated. That is a total of 1,544,513 ballots, Lake's lawyers said. By November 11th, however, Maricopa County reported and the Department of State published they had counted 1,290,669 ballots and had 274,385 left to tabulate, which is a total of 1,565,554 ballots. So the difference between the 9th and the 11th was 21,041. And where it turns out, of course, that Katie Hobbs won with just over 17,000 vote margin district. A shifting number of ballots evidence Maricopa County's failure to count for EV ballots and failure to maintain security. But of course, that's what they're going to do. They're stealing the election. It's just, in my opinion, never been so obvious, never been so blatant, which is why I'm reasonably optimistic that Carrie Lake, who is fighting the good fight, is going to be able to carry this forward. Meanwhile, the Department of Homeland Security says it's going to close gaps along the southwest border wall as the end of Title 42 looms. This would be too little, too late. Nearly 2 years after newly elected President Biden ordered a halt to construction on the project, the Department of Homeland Security announced December 13th it'll work to close gaps along the southwest border of the wall between the United States and Mexico. Biden's 2020 campaign promise was that he would not build one more foot of the border wall, which was one of former President Trump's most prominent objectives. And it was working magnificently. Under Trump, we had only a trickle of immigrants coming across the border. He was masterful in dealing with this. Biden, of course, has precisely the opposite agenda. He wants to flood the United States with illegals, the objective being to bring in 100 million illegals to permanently alter the composition of the United States. We have roughly 300 million. Bring in 100 million illegals, you change a company permanently. The Biden admin is confronted with finding solution to address the end of Title 42, set to expire on December 21st, 5 days hence. DHS has said that could lead to an estimated 9 to 14,000 illegals crossing from Mexico every single day. Created as part of the Public Health Service Act under President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1944. Title 42 was designed to prevent the introduction of contagious diseases into the United States. At the start of the COVID pandemic in 2020, the Trump admin invoked the order to restrict migrant entry into the United States. For the 12 months ending September 30th of 2022, Customs and Border Protection stopped migrants more than 2,766,582 times, compared with 1.72 million in fiscal year 2021, which was a previous high. Once Title 42 is lifted, the number of migrants Border Patrol must process will likely double or greater, according to the Office of Inspector General for DHS. In addition to closing seven small gaps in the wall in the Yuma, Arizona sector, and filling in another space in the El Paso, Texas sector, crews will also work on environmental issues surrounding the wall and finish building roads. Overall, the new work will occur in the Border Patrol San Diego sector, which includes western Arizona and part of eastern California, and the El Paso sector, which covers western Texas and New Mexico. Early in his tenure, Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas indicated that last year the gaps would have to be closed, but DHS has been slow to move forward with the task. gaps have allowed illegals to enter the U.S. and add to the record number of illegal border activity that's escalated since Biden entered office in January of 2021. Building a border wall was one of Trump's most widely discussed campaign promises in 2016. The Trump admin erected more than 450 miles of fence. He planned on adding 300 miles more after Biden took office. Crews were permitted to fill in holes and tie down loose material, but ordered to halt construction. A government accountability office audit conducted in 2021 discovered 69 miles of the wall constructed during the Trump administration includes all the technology and all the roads. Secretary of Homeland Security said on December 13th, the department is preparing for the lifting of Title 42. Economic and political instability around the world is fueling the highest level of migration since World War II, including throughout the Western Hemisphere. The surge in global migration is testing many nation systems, including our own. Construction at some parts of the wall created environmental issues that need repairs, which will take place as part of the new project, which will include installing draining systems, adding safety features, remediating some construction sites between El Paso and San Diego. Think about it. This is a monstrous violation of the Constitution. A president has one of his ultimate responsibilities, preserving the security of the nation, the United States of America. It's not opening arms to migrants from all over the world. Every economist knows you cannot combine a welfare state with open borders because it overwhelms the system. It's going to lead to economic collapse. If we didn't have all the other problems we confront, just a flood of migrants alone would destroy the economy of the United States and lead to economic collapse. This is how irresponsible Biden and the Democrats have become. They are flooding the United States. They know it's going to lead to economic collapse. They're either being incredibly naive or deliberately malevolent in destroying the United States. There have been several proposals to impeach Mayorkas by the new Congress. Those should go forward. Moreover, Biden himself ought to be impeached on this issue. He has committed so many monstrous crimes against the United States. It's disgusting beyond belief. But this has to be among the foremost and the most prominent. Stunning stuff. I want to also address the fact that the White House has flipped out after Elon Musk has said that Fauci-funded research has killed millions. There's absolutely no doubt about it. The White House, and this is from Zero Hedge, says recent comments made by Elon Musk, who in my opinion is turning out to be a great American hero, about Anthony Fauci are dangerous and disgusting. They are disgusting and they are divorced from reality, and we will continue to call that out and be very clear about that, said White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre Monday, before praising Fauci's public handling of the COVID-19 pandemic. Why would any in the world praise Tony the Rat for implementing policies that not only have destroyed the economy, the lockdown, which just wiped out small businesses across the country. But the social distancing, the face mask wearing, none of this works. Jean-Pierre is asked about Elon Musk calling for Fauci to be prosecuted. These personal attacks that we have been seeing are incredibly dangerous. They are disgusting. They are divorced from reality. We should be thankful to him, right? We should be thankful to the greatest mass murder in human history. Thankful. Over the weekend, Musk tweeted, my pronouns are prosecute/Fauci, eliciting widespread shrieks from the collective, including from astronaut Scott Kelly, who said, Elon, please don't mock and promote hate toward already marginalized and at-risk members of violence. At risk of violence, members of the LGBTQ+ community. Is that Anthony Fauci? Is he a member of the LGBTQ+ community? Furthermore, he added, Dr. Fauci is a dedicated public servant whose sole motivation was saving lives. Where has this guy had his head? I mean, this is just ridiculous. I strongly disagree, Musk replied to the left-wing brother-in-law, former Arizona Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. Forcing your pronouns upon others when they don't ask and implicitly ostracizing those that don't is neither good nor kind to anyone, he added. As for Fauci, he lied to Congress and funded gain-of-function research that killed millions of people. Not awesome, IMO, in my opinion. Fauci indeed funded gain-of-function research, offshoring it to Wuhan, China, after the Obama administration had banned it in 2014. What's more, House Republicans think he may have been involved in a cover-up. We write to request a transcripted interview of Dr. Anthony Fauci, director, U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Excerpts of emails we are making public today, see enclosed Appendix I, reveal that Dr. Fauci was warned of two things. One, a potential that COVID-19 leaked from the Wuhan Institute. And two, the possibility that the virus was intentionally genetically manipulated. It is imperative we investigate if this information was conveyed to the rest of the government and whether the information would have changed the U.S. response to the pandemic, reads the January 2022 letter from Representative James Corner and Jim Jordan to Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra. Here's the Oversight Committee Republican tweeting, breaking. We've released never-before-seen emails showing Dr. Fauci may have concealed information about COVID-19 originating from the Wuhan lab and intentionally downplayed the lab leak theory. No doubt about it. Meanwhile, DeSantis, the governor of Florida, continues to display admirable leadership, announcing a petition with the Supreme Court of Florida to impanel a grand jury to investigate any and all wrongdoing in Florida with respect to COVID-19 vaccines. That impresses the hell out of me. This guy is doing a great job. Meanwhile, Biden releases most JFK assassination records but withholds thousands. All the documents should be made public under a 1992 law, but the administration is declining to follow its letter for the second year in a row. President Joe Biden's administration released more than 13,000 records of John F. Kennedy's assassination Thursday, but it fell short of fully complying with the spirit of the 30-year-old law demanding transparency by now. With Thursday's action, about 98% of all documents related to the 1963 killing have now been released, and just 3% of the records remain redacted in whole or in part, according to the National Archives, which controls the John F. Kennedy assassination records collection. The records include more information on the accused gunman Lee Harvey Oswald and his time spent in Mexico City. Let me take a break to talk about that. I do what has been in the past, a weekly JFK show. It's called The New JFK Show with Gary King and Larry Rivera. We've done over 400 of these shows. By virtue of the pandemic weather and all that, we had an interruption. We've recently begun doing with a review by Larry of the assassination of Malcolm X, which you may be startled to learn was tied in with the Texas billionaire H.L. Hunt. He actually was supporting the Nation of Islam, as well as at the same time supporting the John Birch Society financially. they would have been unable to exist without funding from the far-right millionaire oil baron H.L. Hunt. Just to tell you a bit about H.L., I had over 100 conversations with Madeline Duncan Bryan, who is a mistress of Lyndon, with whom he began an affair in 1948. She was a young advertising executive and worked in a bank building where H.L. had an office. She encountered him the day before the assassination in the parking lot, and he showed her a flyer of JFK wanted for treason with a mugshot, the equivalent of a mugshot of JFK, and a list of treasonous activities he was accusing JFK of having committed. And Madeline said to him, "Why, H.L., you can't do that." And H.L. said, "Why, sure I can. I'm the richest man in the world. I can do anything I want." He, the very same guy who undoubtedly played a role in the background in the assassination, where Lyndon sent his chief administrative assistant, Cliff Carter, down to Dallas to make sure all the arrangements were in place before the trip to Texas, which Lyndon had engineered on the ground of patching up conflicts in the party between the liberal senator, who was his nemesis, and the conservative wing of the party, which induced JFK to go along, even though Henry Gonzalez, a congressman from Texas, warned him not to do it. To which Jack replied, "No, Henry, I've checked with the Secret Service and everything is all set." But Jack didn't know, of course, was the Secret Service was complicit. I've discovered more than 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up for the hit, including leaving behind two agents who would have been right on the vehicle or running beside it at Love Field, allowing the crowd to spill into the street after ordering the 110th Military Intelligence Battalion to stand down, which had, over the adamant opposition of its commanding officer, which had maintained crowd control. I have one photograph where the vehicle, the presidential limousine, which, by the way, was put out right in front. I mean, if you want to tell about how this was a setup, the presidential limousine ought to have been in the middle. You have the lower-ranking dignitaries, the mayor, Earl Campbell, who, by the way, joined the CIA in 1956, and whose brother, Charles, was removed by JFK as a deputy director of the CIA after the Bay of Pigs fiasco, where Dealey Plaza was the backyard for the Campbell brothers, and of course the mayor controlled the police department. And the sheriffs were deeply involved in this as well. Not only is the crowd spilling out into the street, but there's a bus on Main Street. Obviously should not have been there. An assassin with a handgun could have taken him out. The crowd spilling out, 8, 10, 12 deep. I mean, it was fantastic. The people loved Jack and Jackie. It was made the lead vehicle. So you ought to have had the mayor, then you have Lyndon Johnson, then you have the president and Jackie somewhere in the middle. After all, if they see Jack and Jackie, who wants to hang around to see the mayor, for God's sake, much less Lyndon Johnson? So they made the presidential limo number one, numero uno. So all the shooters, and they were at 8 different locations, believe it or not, 8 different locations. Well, I've identified 6 by name, rank, and serial number, where they were positioned, the shots they took, and the effects they had. Only Domagar, the 7th, with which I agree. We only have the 8th. Who was on the South Knoll, where there's a single tree. You wouldn't have thought possible to have a sniper concealed there. But I've seen photographs in the hands of 2 different experts where he's standing holding his rifle. Different photographs, same guy. We don't know who he is yet, but it appears each of the sponsors who wanted Jack out and Lyndon in primarily for purposes of policy had their own shooter. There was a Dallas deputy sheriff, top of the county records building. There was an Air Force expert inside the Triple Underpass. There was an Ancaster Cuban in the Daltex. There was a CIA shooter at the intersection of the Triple Underpass and the picket fence. There was a Dallas cop with connections to the CIA who would turn out to be a master assassin who took out some, it appears, some 50 different witnesses and who served as the body double for Lee in the backyard photographs. There was an Israeli shooter. There was Lyndon Johnson, personal hitman. If I had to guess, this last guy would represent the Eastern establishment, the Fed. Jack wanted to get rid of the Fed. He had the Department of Treasury put hundreds of millions of United States notes on the ground that it was absurd for the government to be paying a consortium of private banks interest for printing the currency of the United States, which the United States could do perfectly well at no interest at all. Those are kind of bare bones. I've done a lot about it. If you go to my at Jim Fetzer Twitter site, I've just reposted there an overview of JFK I did last year in anticipation that Oliver Stone was going to release his JFK Revisited on the 22nd. So I published it on the 18th and sent a copy to Oliver with my compliments. I even dedicated it to him. But if you compare what we have there, and this, of course, is a result of the collaborative research that I have conducted on JFK, where I've now published four books, bringing together the best experts to ever study the case, and we've blown apart the cover-up. And once you do that, once you separate the real evidence from the fabricated, it becomes relatively easy to do, such as patching a fist-sized bullet at the back of the head, such as substituting another brain for that of JFK, such as massively editing the whole movie. So they've taken out around 500 frames from the original, which ran about 1,000 frames. Now we have left 487. Has had more frames removed than remain. And then they altered the content by, for example, blacking out that fist-sized blowout at the back of the head where I discovered where you can actually see it in frame 475. This may be something you don't want to miss. Now, about Mexico City, I began talking about that because Larry Rivera, based upon earlier releases, which they did not digitalize, they only released in hard copy to make it more difficult to search. Larry Rivera has painstakingly gone through them page by page. Larry was born in Puerto Rico. He's multilingual. Much of the Mexican business is in Spanish, requiring translation. Larry's put it all together. When they talk about Lee Oswald's time spent in Mexico City, that all appears to be a fabrication. Remember, they were making out that Lee was supposed to be a communist. Actually, he was an operative for the U.S. government. He appears to have been recruited by the Office of Naval Intelligence when he was a recruit in San Diego, where I would subsequently serve as a series commander with 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command. He'd be stationed at Atsugi, which was our nation's most secure base. He was a radar operator. He knew the altitude of the U-2 overflights. He conducted a pseudo-defection to the Soviet Union, apparently at the behest of the CIA, to give them information about the altitude of the overflights so they could shoot down the U-2. And on the eve of a summit meeting between Khrushchev and Eisenhower, Khrushchev accused the U.S. of spying on the Soviet Union, which Eisenhower dutifully denied. And then Khrushchev presented the pilot, Francis Gary Powers, who had not taken his cyanide tablet, and parts of the U-2, which had come down. Fletcher Prouty has an alternative explanation that the CIA wanted to abort the conference, so they shorted the fuel, so it would look as though it had a full tank when it only had a partial tank to guarantee it would come down. One way or another, it did. Embarrassing Eisenhower. Calling off aborting a summit intended to reduce Cold War tensions instead exacerbated them. But the whole deal in Mexico City was ridiculous. It was all contrived, all phony. And get this, as Larry discovered, among the CIA assets in Mexico, three presidents of Mexico. You may want to check out the new JFK show, because we are doing the duty. We are persevering, unrelenting. Lori's making stunning developments. So it talks about Lee Oswald and his time spent in Mexico. I guarantee you, that's going to be a lot of happy horse shit. The article continues about 4,300 records remain redacted in part with no record completely backed out. According to the agency, experts say there's no justification for withholding them to protect national security or intelligence gathering. We're 59 years after President John Kennedy was killed, and there's no justification for this, said Judge John Thunheim, who from 1994 to 98 chaired the Assassination Records Review Board that was established under the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Record Collection Act of 1992, which Biden voted for when it passed Congress unanimously. I know John Thunheim. He even sat in on one of my presentations on the assassination at a conference in North Dakota. Among the documents that remain largely hidden, 44 related to a shadowy CIA, George Ioannidis, and a covert Cuban-related program he ran that came into contact with Lee Harvey Oswald less than 4 months before Kennedy was shot. According to calculation made by JFK researchers with the Mary Farrell Foundation, the nation's largest nonprofit repository of assassination records, which sued the administration to make all the documents public, I support their effort. I have volunteered to join them in this effort. The foundation says the CIA is withholding most of the records at issue. These are really important issues. Ioannidis was a PSYOPs officer. He was involved in both JFK and RFK. CIA officials dispute the number of Ioannidis records in their possession, but confirmed two were scheduled to be released Thursday. We believe all CIA records subsequently related to Mr. Ioannidis were previously released with only minor redactions, such as CIA employee names and locations. They claim they're making tremendous progress. But notice, there's no reason in the world to withhold these documents. They're doing so on grounds of national security. But think about it. If the official narrative were true, if the death of JFK was the result of three lucky shots by a disgruntled Marine who is supposed to be a communist, from the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, from which I can assure you no shots were in fact fired, where Lee was actually in the doorway of the building when the motorcade passed by, there is no national security aspect to this. I admire Tucker, but he has been weak on conspiracies. I have felt for long that he may even still believe that Lee Oswald shot JFK and that 19 Islamic terrorists attacked us on 9/11. Well, here's what Tucker has just had to say about it. Mitchell, if we can play that clip, please.
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson Tonight. So not long after Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald on camera in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters, a lot of Americans started to have some questions about the Kennedy assassination. It was, you have to admit, a pretty extraordinary sequence of events. A lone gunman murders the president of the United States, and then, less than 48 hours later, that lone gunman is himself murdered by another lone gunman. What are the odds of that? It's one thing if you get struck by lightning, rare but possible. But if every member of your family also gets struck by lightning all on different days, you might begin to suspect these are not entirely natural events. But, oh, replied the U.S. government, they are. This bizarre chain of killings was all entirely natural. So less than a year after the JFK assassination, the Johnson White House released something called the Warren Commission Report. And the report concluded that while their motives remained unclear, both Lee Oswald and Jack Ruby had acted alone. No one helped them. There was no conspiracy of any kind. Case closed. Time to move on. And many Americans did move on. At the time, they had no idea how shoddy and corrupt the Warren Commission was. It would be nearly 50 years before the CIA admitted under duress that, in fact, it had withheld information from investigators about its relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald. But even then, at the time, before that was known, The government's explanation didn't seem entirely plausible, and some people started asking obvious questions about it. It was at that point, as Americans started to doubt the official story, that the term conspiracy theory entered our lexicon. As Professor Lance DeHaven Smith points out in his book on the subject, the term conspiracy theory did not exist as a phrase in everyday American conversation before 1964. In 1964, the year the Warren Commission issued its report, the New York Times published 5 stories in which conspiracy theory appeared. Now today, of course, the term conspiracy theory appears in pretty much every New York Times story about American politics. It's wielded, now as then, as a weapon against anyone who asks questions the government doesn't feel like answering. But despite 60 years of name-calling, those questions have not disappeared. In fact, they have multiplied with time. And here's one of them. In April of 1964, a psychiatrist called Louis Joylin West visited Jack Ruby in his isolation cell in a Dallas jail. According to West's written assessment, he found that Jack Ruby was, quote, technically insane and in need of immediate psychiatric hospitalization. Those are conclusions that, puzzlingly, no one who had spoken to Jack Ruby previously had reached. Ruby had seemed perfectly sane to the people who knew him. Louis Joylin West pronounced him crazy. But what West did not say was that he was working for the CIA at the time. Louis Joylin West was a contract psychiatrist for the spy agency. He was also an expert on mind control and a prominent player in the now infamous MKUltra program, in which the CIA gave powerful psychiatric drugs to Americans without their knowledge. So of all the psychiatrists in the world, what in the world was this guy doing in Jack Ruby's prison cell? The media did not seem interested in finding out. In fact, the New York Times, in an extensive 1999 obituary of West, never mentioned the fact that he had worked for the CIA, much less his time in Jack Ruby's cell. Seems relevant. So you can see why non-crazy people would wonder about what really happened. And of course, many have wondered. In 1976, long forgotten, the House of Representatives impaneled a special committee to reinvestigate the JFK assassination. Their bipartisan conclusion? Jack Kennedy was almost certainly murdered as the result of a conspiracy. But the question is, a conspiracy by whom? Well, the obvious suspect would be the CIA. Why else would the agency withhold critical evidence from investigators? Is there a benign explanation for that, for maintaining this level of secrecy for this many years? Not that we're aware of. And it is illegal. In 1992, Congress passed the President John F. Kennedy Assassination Records Collection Act. That act mandated full disclosure of all documents by 2017, 54 years after JFK was killed. The last administration promised to comply fully with that law, but under intense pressure from CIA Director Mike Pompeo, withheld in the end thousands of pages of CIA documents. Today, this afternoon, the Biden administration did exactly the same thing. That would be thousands of pages of documents after nearly 60 years. After the death of every single person involved. But we still can't see them. Clearly, it's not to protect any person. They're all dead. It's to protect an institution. But why? Well, today we decided to find out. We spoke to someone who had access to these still hidden CIA documents, a person who was deeply familiar with what they contain. We asked this person directly, did the CIA have a hand in the murder of John F. Kennedy, an American president? And here's the reply we received verbatim. Quote, the answer is yes. I believe they were involved. It's a whole different country from what we thought it was. It's all fake. It's hard to imagine a more jarring response than that. Again, this is not a, quote, conspiracy theorist that we spoke to. Not even close. This is someone with direct knowledge of the information that once again is being withheld from the American public. And the answer we received was unequivocal. Yes, the CIA was involved in the assassination of the president. Now, some people will not be surprised to hear that. They suspected it all along. But no matter how you feel about or what you thought about the Kennedy assassination, pause to consider what this means. It means that within the U.S. government, there are forces wholly beyond democratic control. These forces are more powerful than the elected officials that supposedly oversee them. These forces can affect election outcomes. They can even hide their complicity in the murder of an American president. In other words, they can do pretty much anything they want. They constitute a government within a government, mocking by their very existence the idea of democracy. As cynical as we have become after 30 years of watching government officials ignore the voters who employ them, we were shocked to learn this. It's not acceptable. Americans have trusted their government less with every passing year since the killing of John F. Kennedy. Maybe this is why. And people have known this for a long time. The people who knew would include every director of the CIA since November of 1963. And that list would include Obama's CIA director, John Brennan, one of the most sinister and dishonest figures in American life. That list would also include, we are sad to say, our friend Mike Pompeo, who ran the CIA in the last administration. Mike Pompeo knew this. We asked Pompeo to join us tonight, and though he rarely turns down a televised interview, he refused to come. We hope he will reconsider.
Surprise, surprise, Mike Pompeo refused to come. I just say I'm encouraged that Tucker is at least catching up. Better late than never. We've been exposing JFK forever. My first book, Blowing Apart the Cover-Up, appeared in 1998, Assassination Science. It was wildly successful, went through some 14 printings, sold lots and lots. There's only one book from which I've ever received substantial royalties, that was it. For David Mantic, who's a leading expert on the medical evidence, discovered that they had patched the fist-sized blowout at the back of the head using material far too dense to be human bone, so that unless the whole back of JFK's head was nothing but solid bone, unless JFK was a bonehead, this was not a naturally occurring phenomenon. Much more to report. I want to open the phone lines early. I encourage first callers to call in. There's so much to discuss.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I want to encourage first-time callers, if you've never called before, if you have questions about Sandy Hook, if you have questions about JFK, today would be a great day to raise those questions with me. I'd be delighted to hear from you. Of course, we have regulars. We have Brian on the phone now, and he calls virtually every show. And, of course, I'm glad to hear from him, but I want to emphasize how much I would like to hear from others who have never called before. 540-352-4452. 540-352-4452. And I've opened the lines early because on Wednesday, I spent the entire 2 hours discussing Sandy Hook, and there was so much to cover that I really did not have the opportunity to take calls. And may I say, that show, which I posted, of course, on my BitChute channel, where all my shows appear, is also on my Twitter account at Jim Fetzer, and is being well received. I would encourage anyone who wants to keep track of what I regard as my latest, check it out on Twitter at Jim Fetzer. We're also because Biden is not releasing all of these docs, but then neither did Trump release all the docs, even though it was his intention to do so. It has to be because the explosive evidence there implicating the CIA would outrage every American who knows what actually took place, who lived through it, who's aware of how massively we've been played. It would be an expose of staggering proportions. It might call for eliminating the CIA, which frankly I believe would be a great good for America and for the world. God knows the CIA has been conducting ops all over the world, assassinations, coups, stage events. It was Barack Obama who legalized, using the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation that the CIA uses abroad, their use in the United States by the Smith Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. And by the way, I'd like to believe the public is waking up about Sandy Hook, but when you can go for 10 years and you can still have most of the public bamboozled by a stage event which was botched in many relatively obvious ways if you stop to think about it, but which was very cleverly designed from a social, psychological point of view to have maximal impact by instilling fear in the hearts of every parent in America to make them more amenable to manipulation to promote a political agenda. I mean, we got to understand how these things are done. This is why I've encouraged you to check, download, and study my law enforcement false flag stage event checklist, co-authored with Brian Davidson, PI, who's a Texas licensed private investigator who did the research into the Connecticut State Police photographic files. That was Exhibit E to my submission to the United States Supreme Court. Absolutely stunning stuff. He has discovered that the photographic evidence contradicts the state police official narrative of what happened. For example, in a hallway where you're supposed to be viewing two bodies, those of Don Hoffspring, who's cast in the role of the principal, and Mary Sherlock, who's cast in the role of the school psychologist, in pools of blood, there are no bodies, no blood. In a classroom where you expect to see a stack of little bodies and blood all over the place, not only is there no blood and no bodies, but there are no school desks, there are no school chairs, there's no teacher's desk, there's no American flag. You know, it's what Brian Davidson unearthed was proof, not only that it was not a mass murder, but that it wasn't even an operating school. And if you want to check that out, go to my blog, jameshfetzer.org, and track down the press release by Ron Avery reviewing why my case before the Supreme Court was so important, not just to me personally, that's incidental, but for all the residents of the state of Wisconsin who are being subjected to a grossly defective summary judgment process and are thereby being denied their right to a trial by jury under the Seventh Amendment. Where it turns out that the Supreme Court has, through a peculiar set of historical circumstances, never affirmed that the Seventh Amendment applies to all 50 states. Nothing could be more worthy of coming before the Supreme Court. State of the Nation, a very formidable online journal, said, "My case may present the most important issue before the Supreme Court in our lifetime. In our lifetime." But because they'd invested so much in the Alex Jones fake trials, they'd invested so much time in propaganda promoting the idea that even if you're high and mighty, even if you're wealthy, even if you're influential like Alex Jones, if you raise a peep to challenge an official government narrative, even when it's blatantly fraudulent like Sandy Hook, you will be punished. They felt that allowing the court to review my case and ruling in my favor, which would have been the obvious appropriate thing to do given the law, the evidence, and their constitutional obligations, it would have undone all the propaganda, all the investment they'd made in the fake trials that are broadcast over and over, again, to manipulate the American people, in this case, to suppress the right to freedom of inquiry and freedom of speech, for God's sake. You have Alex Jones fined nearly $1 billion for expressing an opinion? What kind of a country is that? Well, it's America today. And it appears that they therefore could not allow the Supreme Court to consider my case because it would undo all the propaganda. That's how much they care about the United States. That's how much they care about the Constitution. That's how much they care about the American people. It's all about control. Brian, you've been patient. Go ahead. Share your thoughts.
Well, I was going to make a point about the show you did with, I forget his name, where they were talking about the 432 megahertz to tune the musical instruments. I know some stuff about that that would be illuminating, but it's getting off the subject today, so I don't know if you want to discuss it.
Oh, you're talking about the Inconvenient Truths I do with Gary King. Gary King not only is the host of the new JFK show, and by the way, they're going up on YouTube. He's putting them up. And as I mentioned, there are over 400. And I'm telling you, a lot of these shows are classics. You will learn so much. If you care about JFK, you want to track them down. They're going up as I speak. You'll find of great value. But he also does a new show called Inconvenient Truths. Well, we've now done some 17 episodes where Gary surprises me. He puts up news reports where I have no idea what's coming to get my spontaneous, unrehearsed response and accounting for it. And one of them had to do with music and changing frequencies that are basic to what's being broadcast. Go ahead, Brian. You can talk about it. Go ahead.
Okay. yeah, I really enjoy that Inconvenient Truth. But did you know that, are you familiar with the pyramid codes? You know, there's all kinds of stuff on the internet about the pyramid codes. And one of the codes is if you take 432, like the 432 megahertz, take it times 100, so you've got 43,200, and you take it times the base of the area of the pyramid, you get the circumference of the Earth. Also, if you take the height of the pyramid times the 43,200, you get the circumference of the Arctic latitude or whatever. And there's all kinds of this stuff involving the pyramids. The other thing that you weren't aware of is the Rockefellers sent their minions out years ago to try and get everybody to tune their musical instruments, the concert people, whatever, to 440, and they wouldn't do it. So what Rockefeller did was financed a guy in Chicago, I think his name was Deagle, to build a factory to produce all the percussion instruments at 440 megahertz and church bells, okay? Because then you couldn't have a concert if the, you know, the drums, the cymbals, whatever, were at 440, the whole everybody would have to tune their musical instruments to 440, okay? The church bells in the country used to work at 432, but they replaced the church bells. So now the church bells ring at 440. The reason they do that, I've talked to you about your third eye and your telepathy. What they did to kill your third eye is they put fluoride in the water. The reason they did all this on the 440 is to kill your ability to get telepathy. So that's what's going on.
Well, I'm sure glad you shared that, Brian. Have you got any thoughts about JFK or Sandy Hook, for example?
Well, I can say is when it comes to Fox News, to me, they're controlled opposition. I know they'll give you some good stuff, but you're never going to hear Tucker Carlson say, you know, the Federal Reserve is privately owned. We need to get rid of it, you know, or 9/11 or, you know, they'll go a certain distance, but they won't go the full, you know, the full 100 yards. They'll always stop short. So I just don't even listen to them, you know, and I think Elon Musk is the same thing. He's controlled opposition. And what's going on, and they're aware of this, things happen, true time works in 100-year increments. If you look at the flu pandemic of 1918, you go about 100 years out and you get another flu pandemic. If you look at what's going on in Ukraine today, in 1914, that's when Russia was in the World War I. So you go to 2014, that's when they had the maiden thing, and basically the war started. If you look at what the Cheka was doing in the Soviet Union, it was in 1922, whatever. So you go to 2022, and now you're getting basically what the Cheka, which was, you know, murdering all those Russians. It's starting a 100-year cycle. And the Dearborn, what was it, that paper by Ford, Dearborn Express or something like that, came out 100 years from now. So they're aware of the 100-year cycle. So they look and they go, we're going to start getting exposed here. So we need to get one of our people, meaning Elon Musk, to kind of control things. So everything works in that 100-year cycle.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Brian. Mitchell, your thoughts, my friend. Mitchell, can you join? Meanwhile, I'd like to encourage anyone, even first-time callers, to call in about JFK, Sandy Hook. We're also talking about the war in Ukraine, nuclear war. We're talking about Carrie Lake's, lawsuit. Mitchell, are you here?
Hey, Jim. Yeah, we all know the CIA was involved in the assassination of JFK. During the 70s, and after the assassination, should that truth had come out, there would have been literally a civil war in this country over that. And the CIA would have been cast asunder. It's been so long, people don't care that the CIA and the other powers that should not be essentially are have what I call the full spectrum dominance that they once wanted.
Yeah, I think those are good, very appropriate observations. The CIA has done more damage. Harry Truman said creating the agency was the greatest mistake of his presidency, and I think he got it right. Unbelievable. Your thoughts, by the way, about Sandy Hook, Mitchell, I would be pleased to hear.
Well, I'm not convinced on anything on Sandy Hook, as far as anything. You know, what I always observe is that the aftermath of any tragedy, real or a drill, is used and weaponized today. You know, we have taken these tragedies and turned them into opportunities to twist and break the minds of people when there are such a small number of individuals who have that psychotic break and have mass murders and homicides. You know, it's such a out of place context that for everybody to have to give up their civil liberties and rights because of those individuals, that's a problem. And, you know, we will always have tragedies. There will always be something that people will find tragic. And I guess one of the things that I find that it boils down to is that while we have to have compassion and sympathy in times of death, we can't, if it's someone that we do not personally know, if it's someone who has never really impacted our life, we cannot essentially become emotionally attached and spent, because if that would be the case, then we literally will go from tragedy to tragedy and will create a society, you know, from the diaper to the grave of coddled mother care. And that's why I often say, you know, Big Brother is dead. George Orwell's 1984 is dead. And we've had the rise of Big Mother Effer in place. So we really have a serious a problem here in the United States with power and structure the way it sits right now.
Mitchell, am I to understand correctly, you are agnostic about Sandy Hook and whether it was real and children actually did die, or as to whether it was
that's
a
correct.
Stage event?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Wow!
I'm a resister of all things, Jim.
I'm sorry?
I'm a resister of all things, in all honesty. Yeah, it's like the IPCC saying, you know, in this recent, there was a recent poll that found that 38% or more of individuals, you know, or was it 38%? It was a fairly large percentage still believe that climate change is from the natural processes of Earth and not caused by anthropogenic global warming or by mankind. And, you know, they are shocked and they're so taken back, they don't know what to do. Because, you know, what we know is that, you know, from the ASH experiment and from, you know, the Milgram experiments and, you know, the Stanford Prison Projects, the government will take these operations and layer them in a psychological fashion that it becomes extremely difficult to find the truth and for people to decipher and determine the truth. So I, you know, there are so many things that I question everything, but I also at the same time, I remain open to all possibilities. And, you know, it's like flat earth, I don't believe there's any way in hell. But, you know, there's always that one chance, you know. So, I don't know about Sandy Hook. In all honesty, you know, I listened to you talk about it, but I have not personally invested the time to delve deep into it for myself. Because for myself, being, you know, being a victim of child sexual abuse when I was a very young person, I literally have trust for nothing and no one. And, you know, so I don't want to say I don't believe you, but I do believe you. I believe you believe what you say and you hear, because I can hear that in your voice. And I know that's true. But I have this idea sometimes that the government actually encourages conspiracies, whether true or false, for their own means. To, for example, you know, with after 9/11, and you were such a hot commodity about 9/11, that there had to be some way to figure out a way to neutralize you. This could be it. I don't know. All I know is that there are so many questions on both sides of that for me. And if I just take all my time and all my energy, and that's the only thing that I look at, I have missed so much more of what is actually going on in this world. So, you know, I try not to get down deep into the weeds, into the grass, and into these conspiracies, because the simple fact is, you know, so many of them are set up to be strawmans, and, you know, people will find one thing wrong and then they will hype on that. So I try to look above the details of these conspiracies, and I look at overall strategies. And as I said before, I concentrate more on these mind control aspects of the government and the society that we have been evolved into, because we didn't get here on our own. We got evolved into this. We were groomed into where we're at today, whether it's government, media combined, In cooperation, coordination. You know, yes, I agree with that. So, there. How's that sound?
Well, you mean other than leaving me speechless? That's. I appreciate your candor, but I mean,
no, I would have. Go ahead.
I'm just frankly floored. I mean, I presented so much evidence. Have you ever watched any of my videos where you can see all the evidence that I refer to, where you can see, you know, the porta potties in place, the pizza and bottled water, the name tags on lanyards, the parents bringing children to the scene? Already that ought to be sufficient to convince you it wasn't a mass murder. I mean, that is so elementary. That is so obvious that I'm just stupefied that you wouldn't find that already convincing that it was a drill and not a real shooting event.
Well, I'm going to talk with my neighbor, one of my newer neighbors. He had moved in last year, and he's a former Connecticut State Police investigator, I believe. And I briefly mentioned Sandy Hook one day, and I haven't talked to him in depth about it yet, but I'm planning to. So,
bear in mind, Mitchell, I mean, the whole state basically is in on it. They're very worried. They're taking extraordinary steps to try to ensure that nobody blows it open there. I mean, believe me, right? I know whereof I speak.
Amen. Hey, we're coming. Should hit the break.
You got it. You got it. Hopefully. We'll be back right after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? that the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, I continue to invite first callers. I mean, there must be plenty of you out there who have questions about JFK or Sandy Hook or, my God, the war in Ukraine or, you know, the Twitter. I continue to believe that Elon Musk is doing great things for America. And where he's blowing it open. I mean, he's got access to all of these records. Absolutely sensational. Let me add in a few more reports here. Elon Musk exposes Twitter's censorship of former President Donald Trump. Journalist Matt Taibbi published a third volume of the so-called Twitter Files Fridays, exposing the social media platform censorship and deplatforming of former President Donald Trump. The latest disclosure revealed that Twitter executives used the platform's formidable visibility filtering powers against Trump ahead of the 2020 U.S. elections, and that engagement with the FBI intensified before Trump was permanently banned. Endorsed by Twitter's new owner, Elon Musk, the Twitter files have exposed the social media company's censorship machine. The new report, titled Removal of Donald Trump, is the first of three specifically examining the actions of Twitter executives during the period from October 2020 to when Trump was deplatformed on January 8, 2021. Internal Slack chats at Twitter reveal that engagement between the company's executives and federal law enforcement and intelligence agencies surged during this period. Now, bear in mind, the First Amendment prohibits the federal government engaging in censoring and violating the freedom of speech and freedom of publication of the American people. And here you have proof, massive, extensive detail of just that kind of interaction between federal law enforcement and intel agencies and Twitter during a period of a national campaign for the highest office in the land. Whatever your opinion on the decision to remove Trump that day, the internal communication at Twitter between January 6th and January 8th have clear historical import, Taibbi wrote. Even Twitter's employees understood in the moment it was a landmark in the annals of speech. Is this the first sitting head of state to ever be suspended? One Twitter employee whose name is redacted asked in the Slack chat that day. The messages show that Twitter executive removed Trump in part because of what one executive called the context surrounding the actions of Trump and his supporters over the course of the election and, frankly, the last 4-plus years. In a message to Vijay Gadde, Twitter's former head of legal policy and trust, one executive whose name is redacted provided a quick take formulated by internal researchers and external academics to help decide whether to censor a Trump tweet or use it as a last straw before banning him. The executive said the decision on whether to pull that particular tweet or use it as the last straw for Trump depends on the overall context and narrative in which that tweet lives. Context matters, and the narrative that Trump and his friends have pursued over the course of this election and, frankly, the last 4+ years must be taken into account, the executive said. Before Trump was banned, Twitter also created a new tool to censor the then-sitting president after the election when he was vocal with his claims of election fraud. Internally, executives referred to the tool as L3 Dreamplication. Dreamplication. The new tool was announced on December 10, 2020, when Trump was in the middle of firing off 25 tweets saying things like, "A coup is taking place in front of our eyes," Tiabi wrote. And, of course, Trump was exactly right. On Thursday, the Free Press editor, Barry Weiss, another reporter handpicked by Musk as a conduit for releasing the files, published her report on the extent of Twitter's tools for censorship, revealing the social media company's secret blacklist. Her report noticed that executives refer to shadow banning as visibility filtering. The FBI sent reports to Twitter executives flagging particular tweets, which were then discussed internally, resulting in action taken to censor some tweets or have warning labels slapped on others. Twitter executives set up a dedicated chat group in October 2020 to discuss election-related removals. Neither the Trump campaign, the Trump White House, nor Republicans generally sent moderation requests to Twitter, Tiabi noted. We have looked. They may exist, we were told they do, however, they were absent here. The framework for justifying banning Trump was built in the months before January of 2021, when federal agencies were meeting with Twitter executives more often, according to Tiabi. At one point, Joel Roth, Twitter's former head of trust and safety, noticed in a Slack message regarding Hunter's censorship of the New York Post's Hunter Biden laptop story that he had weekly sync meetings regarding election security with the FBI, Department of Homeland Security, and Office of the Director of National Intelligence. As the election approached, senior executives, perhaps under pressure from federal agencies with whom they met more, as time progressed, increasingly struggled with rules and began to speak of VIOS, V-I-O-S, as pretext to do what they'd likely have done anyway, Tiabi wrote. Internal Slack chat suggests that communication lines between Twitter executives and the FBI were more intense after January 6, 2021, and the chats illustrate executive attitude toward the meetings. According to Yabi, the findings expose the erosion of standards at Twitter as well as actions that were undertaken by high-level executives that violated the company's own policies in the months leading up to the events at the U.S. Capitol on January 6, prompting Twitter to ban Trump indefinitely. And by the way, as an aside, remember, the last two tweets at Twitter that Trump had published before they banned him were telling everyone to be peaceful and law-abiding, that we're the party of law and order, that we must support our men in blue to be peaceful, to be nonviolent. And that's when they banned him for encouraging violence at the Capitol. I mean, how absurd is that? How blatant can you get? How big are the liars we're dealing with here on the national stage? They are monsters. Screen grabs of internal messages revealed that as soon as Twitter execs banned Trump, they began planning to ban future presidents, with one executive noting that then-incoming President Joe Biden's admin will not be suspended by Twitter unless absolutely necessary. God knows, that's their guy. Tiabi's report on Trump's ban, the first of three, on Twitter provided a number of examples sharing screen grabs from internal Twitter communications as evidence. Tiabi, Weiss, and author Michael Schellenberger are the three authors Musk is working to release the inner workings of Twitter prior to his $44 billion acquisition of the social media company. And bear in mind, I'm convinced he spent twice as much as it was worth. Twice as much as it was worth. Because it turned out that half of those using Twitter were bots. They were fake accounts. They were propaganda organs. He's actually not only getting rid of all of those, but he's got rid of half the staff that were all engaged in censorship. And he's got rid of the four top figures running the shop, all totally appropriate. He shelled out $22 billion more than, in my opinion, the company was worth on behalf of the American people and in support of his dedication of freedom of speech and freedom of the press, for which I admire this guy. On Friday, Tabby said he, Weiss, and Schellenberg would publish three volumes dedicated to the censorship of Trump. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So they're all out there. They're available. Attempt to corrupt a presidential election. Musk sends direct warning to Hillary Clinton after discovering her law firm's action during the campaign. Here is another tell. Elon Musk, CEO of Twitter, publicly criticized radical Marxist and longtime government dependent Hillary Clinton after discovering more details about Perkin Coie's attorney, Michael Sussman. Clinton, a usurper, is a rage-filled public servant who has terrorized the American people, including the Democrat Party, with the most nagging power grabs in American history. Her associates likely walk in constant fear for their lives. It is rumored that many people who got into Clinton's snares have met with untimely deaths. Musk's smackdown of Clinton is well-deserved and much appreciated by many Americans. The 75-year-old goes on constant winter rages against conservatives and Republicans and has lived off the government for much of her life as a high-profile insider. Clinton, according to her bio, is an American politician, diplomat, and former lawyer who served as a 67th United States Secretary of State for President Barack Obama from 2009 to 2013, as a United States Senator representing New York from 2001 to 2009, and as a First Lady of the United States, as wife of President Bill Clinton from 1993 to 2001. Clinton would have the inside information on the best legal services in the world to use to usurp power from the American people. Sussman and Perkin Coie represented the failed 2016 Clinton presidential campaign and were allegedly part of the production and dissemination of the bizarre PP Tapes dossier, which was authored by former British spy Christopher Steele, and was a catalyst for taking down a city president by a group of out-of-control administrative state thieves. The freaky dossier, which Clinton used as opposition information that was known as total fantasy, contained outrageous, slanderous, and unfounded allegations about her then-GOP rival Donald Trump, which were planted as leaks in Marxist-controlled media, and then used by lying U.S. House representatives and senators, then leftist mainstream media, to discredit and demonize Trump. And then all of Trump's supporters as well, to the point where Trump could not get done the agenda he campaigned on. And of course, the PP is alluding to the fabricated story that Trump had hired prostitutes to urinate on a bed that had been slept in by Barack Obama and Michelle. Trump himself said it was absurd. He'd never do such a thing. And, of course, he wouldn't. He even added he's germophobic. I mean, this was just stupid shit. Unbelievable. Corrupt media, mainstream media, is ignoring Musk's smackdown on Twitter as he exposes the administrative state. However, independent media is picking up stories like this one. Attempt to corrupt a presidential election. Musk sends direct warning to Hillary Clinton after discovering her law firm's action during campaign. SarahPalin.com reported, adding, Twitter isn't using Perky Quoy. No company should use them until they make amends for Sussman's attempt to corrupt a presidential election. Elon Musk posted on Twitter on December 9th of 2022. Hillary Clinton tweets, the Republican Party and its mouthpieces now regularly spread hate and deranged conspiracy theories. It is shocking but not surprising that violence is the result. As citizens, we must hold them accountable for their words and the actions that follow. Musk said, Twitter isn't using Perk and Quoy. No company should use them unless they make amends. Sussman, who was then also at Perk and Quoy, gave the FBI data that purported to show a link between Trump and Russia via Alpha Bank. The link was false. Special Counsel John Durham charged Sussman with one count of lying to the FBI, but a Washington, D.C. jury cleared him earlier this year. Sussman, a cybersecurity lawyer, provided Baker with obscure internet data indicating a possible communication channel between computer servers associated with the Trump Organization and Alpha Bank, Russia's largest commercial financial institution, CNBC reported. The FBI later determined Sussman's concerns were unfounded. Musk and Clinton got into a fight on the platform in October after Clinton tweeted a piece from the LA Times that seemed to place the blame for the attack on Paul Pelosi on the Republicans. The Republican Party, its mouthpiece, has now regularly spread hate and deranged conspiracy theories, she said at the time. It is shocking but not surprising that violence is the result. As citizens, we must hold them accountable for their words and the actions that follow. Meanwhile, and this is pretty damn interesting, a key ally has just flipped on Joe Biden, and now Democrats are pressing the panic button. Joe Biden is facing dissension in the ranks. And a key ally just flipped on Joe Biden, and now Democrats are pressing the panic button. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat of New Jersey, blasted President Joe Biden for trading the Merchant of Death arms dealer Viktor Bout to Russia in exchange for imprisoned WNBA player Brittany Griner. This should be a moment of deep reflection for the United States government to recognize we have a serious problem with hostage taking of Americans, Menendez stated. The Russians and other regimes think that take American citizens hostage cannot pretend that there's equivalence between the Brittany Griners of the world and people like Viktor Bout, the so-called merchant of death. Prisoner swaps are dicey propositions in that handing over a high-value warlord like Bout only encourages rogue regimes like Russia to kidnap more American citizens in order to win concessions from the U.S. government. Senator Menendez added it was crazy to swap the most notorious arm dealer in the world for a basketball player. Nothing could be further from the truth. And we cannot ignore that releasing Bout back into the world is a deeply disturbing decision, Menendez explained. We must stop inviting dictatorial and rogue regimes to use Americans overseas as bargaining chips. And we must try to do better at encouraging American citizens against traveling to places like Russia, where they are primary targets for this type of unlawful detention. Menendez expresses disappointment that President Biden abandoned U.S. Marine Paul Whelan in a Russian prison after he was convicted on trumped-up espionage charges and said that he would be pushing the president to free Whelan. My heart goes out to the families of other American citizens in Russian prisons and labor camps, including Paul Whelan, Menendez continued. They have my renewed commitment and determination to use the power of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee to secure Mr. Whelan's safe return and to continue fighting for the release of all Russian political prisoners, like Vladimir Karamurza and other unjustly detained Americans. Joe Biden is under fire for swapping Russian with dangerous arm dealer for a basketball player because it satisfied the woke left-wing outrage mob. Even members of his own party are taking offense with President Biden's bad deal. And by the way, I have a photograph of Brittany Grimes sitting in a car, bare-chested, and guess what? Brittany Grimes has no mammaries. She has no breasts because she is a he. And the Russians sent her to a men's prison. This is just so insulting. And I got to tell you, Barack Obama and Michelle are behind all this because, of course, she is also a man. In her case, a better fake because she has breast implants. But that's who Michelle Obama is. She was born Michael LaVon Robinson. She played football at Oregon State. She had a fair record of tackles. But according to her fellow students, she was bemoaning that she was a woman trapped in a man's body. She transferred to Princeton and assumed the new name of Michelle in a female persona. I have photographs of them together with what looks to me like a young Bill Gates, where it's obvious that Michael is a man. I put this all together in a presentation I gave at the False Flag and Conspiracy 2020 conference. You can download it from jameshfetzer.org. Remember the H, jameshfetzer.org. Just look at events. Go to the 2020 False Flag and Conspiracy Conference and you'll find where you can download all the shows to your desktop for free. Or alternatively, go to my Twitter page, at Jim Fetzer. Just go to my Twitter page, at Jim Fetzer. You'll find I'm putting up a lot of good stuff there, including this particular presentation, which was entitled Deception Galore. Deception Galore. In 1 hour, you can have your brain fried, I guarantee, because I expose so much fakery. How many times Hillary has used phony debate doubles, even phony body doubles, even in national debates with Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump on the national stage? That's why they thought they could put up a Biden double to debate Donald Trump on the national stage. I was calling him out as a fake at the time. Absolutely stunning stuff. So you want to, I think, take advantage of that opportunity. Go to at Jim Fetzer on Twitter, at Jim Fetzer on Twitter, and check out what you find there. You won't be disappointed. Meanwhile, even Gavin Newsom is slamming Biden for his border policy. California is about to break. Surprise, surprise. Governor Gavin Newsom is warning California that the state could break amid President Joe Biden's decision to reverse Title 42, which allows police and border officers to expedite the expulsion of illegal immigrants. The Biden admin is planning to reverse the Trump-era policy, which Newsom says would cause a huge flow of illegal migrants to enter the state through the southern border. The fact is, what we've got right now is not working and is about to break in a post-42 world unless we take some responsibility and ownership, Newsom said, as the policy is expected to be lifted next week. Adding that he doesn't mean to point fingers, Newsom complained about Biden sending planes and buses to California full of migrants because of all the good work the state is doing for the immigrant community. The California governor claimed the U.S. government is sending hundreds of illegal migrants to the state because it is taking care of folks, adding, the more we do, the burden is placed disproportionately upon us. Very, very interesting. And Mitchell has just tweeted 1 hour ago from Elon Musk. And soon, ladies and gentlemen, the coup de grace. Listen to that. And soon, ladies and gentlemen, the coup de grace. That, of course, is a final shot, putting someone to death, a coup de grace. If they're only wounded, they get a shot in the head to finish them off, the coup de grace. We have much to look forward to. Meanwhile, I'm really astonished to learn that even Mitchell remains a skeptic about Sandy Hook. I do not believe the evidence allows that. And what you could not see over the radio, you can see now. Go to my blog, my video, you can go to my blog now because there's a new article about the weapons used at Sandy Hook where I've embedded, let's go to jameshfetzer.org, I've embedded Count the Ways, the show from Wednesday, where you can see all the visual evidence, at least a whole lot of it, or you can find it on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, or you can find it on my Twitter account, at Jim Fetzer. Check it out. Look at my other stuff on Sandy Hook. Really, frankly, you look at the evidence, there really isn't any room for doubt. I, of course, respect everyone's entitlement to their own opinion. I'm just saying, take a good look. Check out Sandy Hook Update 2 for more if you want. Meanwhile, spend as much time with your friends, your family, your loved ones over this weekend. Cherish them. We do not know how much time we have left. Thanks for being here.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...